than a couple of Bulvat's voidsman heavies. I smeared away the greasy footprint on the floor with a stolen parchment, tucking it in my fatigues after wiping my boot, then listened at the door for a moment to check the path was clear. It was, thank the stars. This time I left in a hurry. I don't think I had much swagger left in me. I stood outside Bulvat's office, bolt upright, just as he liked me to. The bald bastard had this habit. If I turned up even a few minutes early, of making me wait outside his quarters until the specified time, even though I knew he was doing nothing in particular. Conversely, if I turned up even a single minute late, he would shout himself hoarse in berating me for wasting his time. I felt a surge of hatred in my chest, my necktie formals suddenly feeling tight across my torso. For a moment, I found myself imagining Bulvat all broken up and snapped, blood smeared across his stupid, shiny skull. Then banished the image with a grimace. Not a good thing to dwell on. Not at all. This evening was all about escaping the horrors of the last few days and making a delicate political position strong enough to last. The door to Bulvat's office clunked open, and Threnard's weather-beaten face, old before its time and entirely devoid of warmth, poked out.
"Venderson," he said. "He's ready for you now."
I saluted, then clicked my heels, as much to get into the right headspace as to show any kind of obedience. "My thanks, Adjutant Prime Threnard," I said. "And it's Field Commander Venderson, if you recall." I walked into the room to see Bulvat sitting at the strategium table, his hexagram and board in pride of place. I had always coveted that thing. Tessellating hexes of Iaxian granite, Calthian jade and Talisarian mother of pearl were chased with lines of red gold. The pieces themselves were just as sumptuous. The set was worth an absolute fortune, but more than any monetary value, I wanted it for what it represented. Legitimacy, privilege, freedom from the desperate worlds of the cobbled alleyway, the overpopulated hive sprawl, and the sweat-stained training ground. To own such artifacts was to belong to another level of existence altogether.
"Do sit, Field Commander," said Bulvat,
motioning to a chair made of Truscan mahogany. I'd always wondered whether it was a calculated insult that amongst all the antiques that Bulvat had collected over the course of his long career, not one of them came from my dark, briny homeworld of Noctis. It sent a message clear enough. The planet was of no real value, and we Nocti had nothing to be proud of. "Are you prepared for a crushing defeat?" I asked, forcing just the right amount of levity into my tone.
"I am prepared to give no quarter," he said,
narrowing his eyes.
"You don't object to Threnard accompanying us, I take it?"
He waved the rhetorical question away before I had a chance to answer.
"He has aspirations of giving you a sound thrashing of his own some day."
I felt my soul squirm inside, but said nothing. At least Threnard had the decency to look away. I could feel his intense gaze finding something else to study. "Shall we begin?" I said, moving my first disc in a standard gambit.
"You must permit me a few pleasantries as we let the blood flow," said Bulvat, replying in kind. "It has been so long. You don't look as if you are sleeping well, Leanna."
"Well, I've had some difficult nights." I took one of the balding tyrant's outriders, opening myself to a pincer that gave him a chance to take one of mine and earn himself a warm sense of vengeance.
"Only to be expected, given the fact we are in Empyrean transit," said Bulvat. "When you get to my age, you'll sleep sounder, even when things get rough."
Oh, but how I hoped he was right.
"Nothing troubling you, is there, Field Commander?" said Threnard innocently.
"Perhaps," I said, wobbling my head from side to side as if weighing something up. I moved a piece in, central, forming half a guard hex. Transit bleed, perhaps? Pressures of the new rank? Maricel Thorne is a hard act to follow.
She left quite an impression on us all, said the adjutant. I am sure you think of her often.
I nodded absently, but let it slide, pretending to concentrate on the game. For some reason I was acutely aware of the scratches on my calf, throbbing with a dull pain. Maybe they were infected after all.
Bolvat had developed his game well, but I could see three decent plays at the back. Always so pedestrian, his gambits. Defensive, even predictable.
I felt myself wonder how Threnard would play. Like a weasel-faced scumbag, no doubt.
"Are you content with my inception thus far?" I asked.
Bolvat snorted.
"Frankly, no."
He took my leading piece. I felt a hand of tension at my throat.
"No, High Patriarch?"
"Another Savlar found this morning, top of his head blown across the ceiling. 3 dead, not counting Thorn herself, all within a matter of days."
"How did he die?" I said, my brow lined with concern. It wasn't hard to make it look genuine, especially when I called up the memory of that ruined skull and the blood on the ceiling.
"Shot himself an hour before false dawn," said Threnard. "Warp madness, they think."
"It's a terrible thing," I replied.
"It is when it's on your watch,"
shouted Bolvat, suddenly standing up and leaning over so that he was practically spitting in my face. Hexagram and pieces toppled, rolling across the board. One fell, but Threnard's arm shot out to catch it.
3 deaths in 60 hours,
bawled Bolvat, too incensed to care.
"That's well above acceptable percentages for a craft of our magnitude, and all from the same unit. What in the Emperor's name is going on, woman?"
"I can only imagine it's a gang killing," I said, trying to keep calm by resetting the board as best I could. Threnard replaced the fallen piece in the correct hex and orientation, but his eyes never left me. "It's the Savlars," I said, as if that explained everything. "They often carry over vendettas from their former lives."
"Do they?" said Bolvat, his words cold as a grave slab.
He sat back down, but his body language was still that of a hyperfelid about to pounce. "They are all criminals, incepted into the Astra Militarum to bulk out the numbers," I said. "Even with the Great Pardon, they're bound to cause trouble, especially when there's no enemy for them to loot and pillage."
"In her defence, High Patriarch, it is not the first time something like this has happened," said Threnard.
"In her defence,"
said Bolvat, his tone dripping with acidic incredulity.
"In her prosecution. These are the same Savlar with which Field Commander Venderson associated upon Torpentire. You told me that yourself, Threnard."
"Yes, High Patriarch. She is still very much my prime suspect."
"I am still very much here, Adjutant Prime," I said. Threnard shot me a sidelong look, all knives.
"And were you playing hexagrammon with Vic Stenstadt at the time of these Savlar murders, Field Commander Venderson?"
"No, High Patriarch," I said. "At the time of the suicide, I was in my bunk, sir, sleeping off an Amasek session that I resorted to in order to get some sleep. And if you are linking the Equestrium incident to all this, at that hour I was in conference with one of my associates, Enoch Whitemane."
"A rattling," said Bolvat. "Such company she keeps."
He shook his bald head, but I could feel his wrath was subsiding like a thundercloud passing overhead. The lie about Whitemane was another high-stakes gamble, but if I could get to the food-stained little midget before Threnard did, there was a chance I could make it work as an alibi bought and paid for.
"We will see," said Bolvat.
"Does this mean anything to you?" said Threnard,
thrusting a piece of parchment 2 feet from my nose. It was one of Doyler's crude charcoal pictures. The emaciated woman, broken and awful, with those long, hideous nails. It was a supreme effort not to scream.
"Charming," I managed. I waved it away. "Your line work is improving, Threnard, but your study model looks a little sick."
Threnard raised an eyebrow, tucking the picture away once more.
"I took it from the quarters of the suicide, one Culpius Doyler. One of dozens of such images he had amongst his sketches. He was a very disturbed individual."
That much was true. I had one of his little works of art tucked inside my vest, and right now it felt more prickly and uncomfortable than ever.
"Warp transit, as you say," I shrugged. "It's never dull for long."
"Ha!"
said Bulvat. But there was no trace of warmth or humour in the exhalation.
"And this one?"
Threnard took out another parchment, unfurling it. I felt my tongue dry up like a lizard in the desert sun as I realised it was the sketch he'd done of me, sitting in the sun on a cairn of stones.
"I'm flattered," I managed. "From the same artist?"
Threnard stared hard.
"Yes. He must have been one of the young men I served with in the Herod Mountains. We left plenty of cairns there."
"He must have been,"
said Bulvat again, nodding with his eyes narrowed.
"Very well. You say you know nothing about all this, and although I do not believe you for a minute, I have little in the way of proof. But any more oversights, any more incidents like this, and I will strip you of your rank before your first active command even begins. Do you understand me, Field Commander Venderson?"
"Absolutely," I replied, feeling as if I had been punched in the chest. "Would you excuse me? I had no knowledge of this suicide, and I have inquiries of my own to make to ensure no more incidents occur this side of translation."
"Would you excuse me, she says,"
said Bulvat, sighing as if I were a truculent child.
"Go about your business, Venderson, but tread carefully. Marisol Thorne was a fond part of my staff, and her death is linked to the demise of these gutter-snipe savlars. I am sure of it."
At this, I thought I saw something in the wall behind him just for a moment. A strange outline on the wall, a stain spreading slowly from nowhere, with what looked like a spindly arm stretched out to one side. I looked away, a feeling of cold dread spreading down my limbs. Bulvat leaned forwards, sensing that my attention had slipped away.
"You might well look uncomfortable. If I find even a shred of evidence you are connected with any of these killings, I will have no option but to have you beaten until the whole truth comes out."
"Of course, High Patriarch," I replied. "I promise you, my conduct from here will be exemplary." I saluted, clicking my heels once more and made to leave. Threnard held the door for me. Ever the gentleman.
"Good luck, Field Commander Venderson," he said to me as I passed him. "I have a feeling you will need it."
I made my way to the galley at a double quick pace, fury driving me forwards, even though my body felt ready to collapse from mental and physical exhaustion. Bulvat and Threnard were already on to me. If I didn't make it to Enoch first and get my story straight, I was as good as dead. I was mad at myself more than anything else, having let their primitive interrogation tactics rattle me so much I gave a false alibi. Even if the meet with Enoch went without a hitch, there were another 3 days before we made warp translation. I felt all but certain that they would execute me before we were back in real space if I didn't get killed in the night by some hideous assassin thing first. So far my career as field commander was going swimmingly. I smelled the ship's galley before I saw it, the stink of bad cabbage mingled with the sharp carbon tang of burned animal. It was not a good sign. Enoch wouldn't countenance the loss of even a single rasher of Grok's meat.
For all else the Ratlings were, they made great cooks. So either he was absent or very busy. Emperor, please let him be there. I reached the oval hatch that led into the galley and knocked 3 times on the door jamb. There was a fair bit of noise coming from inside, raised voices, the round clang of tureens and the occasional hiss of steam from an auto-processing machine. It occurred to me that a Noctite officer in formal uniform this late in the shift might not be welcomed with open arms, especially given how cagey Enoch was with his secondary line of work. To be honest, I was past caring at this point. "Random inspection," I called out, more for the benefit of anyone who was tailing me than anyone inside. I screwed my eyes shut for a moment. Another risky play. No veteran officer was stupid enough to carry out a random inspection on the kitchen. Not if they wanted to eat anything better than piss-laced gruel for the rest of the journey. I ventured inside. There were perhaps 6 galleymen in there, preparing the officers' corps breakfasts and freeze-blasting them to last the night. Berating them with a fiery passion was Enoch Whitemane, a 4-foot scrapper of a ratling with a shock of unruly hair. It had been some time since he could legitimately have called that mane white. Over his 43 years of operating the war group's greasy and humid kitchens, it had become the colour of a low-stick addict's lungs. I walked in, making myself obvious by knocking on the edge of a brushed steel cooking desk. The ratling did not look over. He was too busy, swearing a blue streak at one of his underlings. Despite the fact the man towered over his boss, the galleyman was actually pale with fear. Whitemane felt me looking at him and glanced over in my direction. He gave a hissing whisper, and the young man and his fellow cooks vanished out of the back door without looking back. "Field Commander Venderson," he said. His rasping voice was strangely deep for one so short. "To what do I owe the pleasure? It's nearly midnight."
"I need answers and a favour."
"Another one?"
"Yes. If anyone asks, we were in close consultation with one another for the entirety of yesterday evening."
"Ah, no, we weren't," he said, wrinkling his ruddy nose. "I was in here, just as I am in here every evening, with plenty of people to swear to the fact. You know that."
"Then so was I. Reading data slates in the stockroom, perhaps, finding a moment's peace from the constant knocking on my door." I shook my head. Why was he being so difficult?
"Make it work, Whitemane, and we're square for the Brig Hall." "You already called in that fiver," he said.
He grabbed a piece of rolling paper from a tobacco-strewn shelf nearby and wiggled it in the air.
"All the little notes? Besides, there were 5 other people working with me last night. You have enough favours to call in to cover all of them, too."
He had a point. The more I thought about it, the less it seemed like the alibi could work. But his was the name I had blurted out in front of Bulvat and Threnard, and there was nothing I could do about it now.
"Look, Enoch, I'm in trouble. It's bad. I need your help." "Oh, yes," he said. "Yeah, really do."
He went over to an auto-processor, fiddled with a couple of the buttons on it. Steam hissed from the side vents.
"I heard the latest. A lot of your old Savlar friends in trouble recently, it seems. The terminal kind. Any idea why?"
"It's no accident, I know that much. Something weird is going on, even for warp transit. Have you heard anything about any officio assassinorum presence in the war group?" He winced.
"Why not just come right out and ask me?"
"I'm not in the mood for dancing around the subject," I said. "I haven't the time to mess around, and you have more inside information than anyone I have ever met. So have you heard of anything weird? Anything that can move through solid objects?"
"No, Liana,"
he said, rubbing his eyes with gnarled, heavily scarred fists.
"I have heard nothing of the sort. A member of the Assassinorum? for our little war group?
He raised a hairy eyebrow.
They say you Noctai know more than most, but realise less. I'm not sure the High Lords of Terra think of our light-fingered Savlar friends as a big threat.
A private contract, then? I could hear the note of pleading in my voice, and I did not like it one bit. There was a faint tapping, clicking noise at the back of the galley, and though I knew it had to be some cooking machine or other, it was playing on my nerves.
No such thing with the Assassin Ordem, said Whitemane. But we are in transit, in the warp, and crazy things happen. I'm sorry they are happening to you and yours, for what it's worth.
And you're right. About what?
You're out of time.
I saw long shadows then, as the door that led from the galley into the stockroom opened wide. Three Savlar chem dogs burst through in full combat gear. I backed towards the corridor, but another three were coming through that way as well. The one in the middle of the latter group was enormous. He had the physique of a Goliath ganger, bulked out with vat-grown muscle, and it looked like he was as much cybernetic as he was human. His Savlar fatigues were not so much worn as wrapped around him, a motley of several sets with the sleeves tied in strips around his biceps and thighs.
"Evening," he said calmly.
"You treacherous little shit, Enoch." I spat phlegm at the rattling, hitting him on the lapel. I suddenly realised that coming straight from a formal meet in Borvat's war room without heading back to pick up my pistol was a very bad idea indeed.
"Sorry, Venderson," said the rattling cook. "You're bringing a lot of heat, and it's bad for the market." "Worse than bad," said the giant chemdog. "You got how many of my men killed now?"
"They were grown men and hardened criminals," I said back. "They made their own decisions."
"The worst they ever made was working with you."
"You must be Crodden," I said, noticing the sergeant's chevrons tattooed on his forehead. "Heard you made quite the impact on Armageddon."
"Sergeant Rojo Crodden, acting platoon commander of the 270s,
he said. He snorted like a bull, the ugly resp snout covering his mouth wet with saliva and snot.
"Time for you to learn some respect."
I felt two pairs of hands grab me from behind and slammed my head back fast. I felt it connect, the sensation of bone and teeth breaking, making me smile as a loud yelp of pain sounded in my ear. A moment later, I stamped hard on the instep of the boot I saw out of the corner of my eye, ducked a meaty arm, then came up diagonally so my shoulder caught my next attacker in the stomach. I was rewarded with a pained wheeze, this time, and saw a man with a straggly beard spitting blood. Seeing a pair of goggles glinting to my left, I swung an elbow back to connect with the next one's throat, smashing his resp free in a spray of atomized stims. Then the giant strode over, cocky and overconfident, as most of these really big muscle heads are. I lashed out a boot and took him just under the kneecap, hard enough to dislodge his patella, and force it up into his thigh. He stumbled and went down with a bellow of pain, grabbing a cleaver from a chopping block at his side.
"Right," he shouted. "Change of plan. Death sentence."
I danced away, but that Sergeant Crodden, he had some real reach. The cleaver came round crazy fast, and its blunt end clipped me on the temple. Everything went black. I came to a moment later, surrounded by six of Savlar's finest. They had me in a double arm lock, and they were forcing me forwards, pushing me and kicking at my boot heels so I stumbled towards the machine at the back of the kitchen. The auto-carnis processor, it was called. The galley staff just called it the meat engine. Put a carcass in one end, it gets torn up nice and fine, and you can work the machine for ground meat for days. I'd heard tales of Enoch using it to intimidate more than one fool who couldn't pay his bills.
"She's coming too, Rojo," said one of the chem dogs. "Gonna struggle hard. Better watch your knees."
There were a few stifled laughs. Then I heard a fist connect with a thump, a loud crack, and someone slumped to the floor behind me. The strip lights in the ceiling flickered, throwing weird shadows that made me feel strangely dizzy.
"Sleep it off till you learn some respect, boy," said Grodden. "Or you'll go in the grinder as well."
I struggled then, all right. I thrashed, bit and screamed until a hand was clamped over my jaw. I bit that too. I felt myself being lifted up, kicked and punched myself free, jabbed two fingers into a bloodshot eye, got smacked in the side of the head, and was lifted up again, this time by a grip so strong I couldn't break it.
"Time to give a little back to the troops, Field Commander," said Rojo. "Like back on Herod."
I could see the boxy maw of the meat engine, its interior blade teeth like the business end of a Goliath rock grinder. With a guttural roar, it powered up, and the circular blades began to spin, spitting sparks and flecks of meat. The strip lights flickered again, dark, light, dark. Then they went out altogether. I fell, and the screaming started. Flickering, strobing, flashing, the lights rendered everything like a stuttering protovid from one of Bulvat's antique zoetropes. I saw that meathead Crodden lifted from his feet by an invisible force. It crushed him against the ceiling until his neck broke with a horrible snap. Faces slashed open as if four knives had been driven into them and ripped sideways with sickening force, blood and teeth spraying everywhere. Throats opened so deep the spine was visible in the gaping hole. Over and over again, deep slashing marks appeared in pale Savlar flesh, as if people were being clawed by some monstrous, invisible beast. More sudden images cut into a series of tableau by the strobing light. I felt as if I was fixed by some hideous paralysis. It was all I could do to just gape, lying propped on my elbows. Flash! Fatigues ripped through, ribs flying from torn-open torsos. Flash! Tongueless mouths full of blood. Flash! Eyeballs bursting in a spray of fluids ripped from a mask of red. Flash! A headless corpse flailing in futile desperation to collide with racks of pots, sending saucepans clattering everywhere. Flash! Arteries gushing black. A tattooed hand reached towards me from above. On instinct, I batted it away into darkness. A moment later, I saw the forearm lit brightly, but this time the hand had been ripped away to leave a spraying bright red stump. Blood spattered my face, hot and stinking. I felt something scratch my shoulder. Four lines of fire appearing under my fatigues and yelped like a scarred dog. Then I heard a rasping noise above me. It sounded halfway between a death rattle and a woman's voice, its tone so filled with hatred that I felt my bones turn to water.
"Mine!"
I scrabbled backwards until I saw the faint line of light coming from the galley entrance. Driven only by animal instinct, I crawled through the melee on my belly, bashing my head on the hard plastic skirt of a cook desk in my haste to escape. The lights in the galley had gone out entirely now, but the screaming still filled my ears. I left smears of other people's blood along the corridor as I scrambled away, stunned and ungainly as a newborn herd beast. Then I finally got into my stride and ran until I collapsed. For the next few hours, I stumbled away from any sign of movement, no matter how small. I wasn't in my right mind, and my head throbbed fit to burst. I rebounded from walls and doorways like a drunken sailor caught in the teeth of a storm. Somewhere in my mind, I knew I was leaving spots and smudges of blood behind me, and that someone of Threnard's calibre would track them easily enough. But I was obeying one simple animal instinct above all others. Get away. I finally came to my senses in the bilges of the ship, down near the brig, where everything was quiet and still. The punitive deck was the least likely place for other people to hang out, and as a wanted woman it made a kind of sense that I bolted there. On some superstitious level, I think the Savlar feared the place. The galley massacre had put paid to my theories of an imperial assassin hunting me and mine. I was the only one in that kitchen connected with Thorne's death, and but for a new set of scratches, I had been left intact. There was something else going on here. It says a lot about the Chemdogs that I'd rather take my chances with some weird warp phenomenon than being found by a bunch of vengeful Savlar. It's not like having other people around had helped. When it came to the visitations, if anything, I was the one being spared. Back in the galley, the horrific force had essentially saved me from being ground into mincemeat. I shivered, cold and hungry. A sudden hollowness in my gut reminded me I hadn't eaten for almost 2 days. There was no food down here, save for perhaps the odd scuttle roach or stowaway rat. I wasn't sure I was that desperate just yet. I caught sight of myself in the reflection of a burnished copper heat sink, part of the ship's infrastructure. Still wearing formal Noctai uniform, albeit spattered with dirt and blood, the sight brought me back to my senses a little, made me think like an intelligent person instead of a scared animal. I had to act, to strike back somehow. And what did the Noctai do when things got tough? They got off their backsides and made change happen. I stood up, shakily, and blew out a long, shuddering breath. All was not lost. The events in the galley could have been due to an unsanctioned psyker amongst Crodden's bully boys, his psyche going haywire with the prospect of a kill in such close confines to the warp. Wild psykers were bad news, everyone knew that. If even one of them went rogue, they said, the only thing that could save you was the God Emperor himself. Maybe that's the answer, I thought. If it was a supernatural threat, and the events in the galley had made abundantly clear that it was, I should be looking for some manner of spiritual defence. Faith wasn't something I had much of, but in the teeth of the tempest, any port will do. Despite myself, I found myself praying under my breath. Maybe that would be enough. I checked my timepiece, the second of two vintage cog Kronos given to Thorne and I by Bulvat in a rare moment of largesse. 16 minutes until the Vespertine service was over. I could still make it up to the Ministorum deck in time. Given my rants on the nature of imperial religion over the years, Threnard would not think to look for me there, and the Savlar avoided the imperial cult as if it would burn them. I straightened my uniform as best I could, used a spit-covered thumb to rub off the worst of the blood, and ran at a jog towards the Ministorum deck. Mikhail Gethsemi was a flabby, watery-eyed 50-something with a bad hunchback and a severe case of the shakes. He'd gone sober 3 months back, according to the Noctai scuttle, and his temper had been awful ever since. He tried knocking the drink on the head every year or so, but it never stuck. He'd be back on the moonshine soon enough. Catch him on the wrong day, and he was a hungover nightmare. The story was that Pater Gethsemi had his back broken in a tussle with a rebel in his 20s, back in the Damocles Gulf. Some said there was more to it. He certainly wasn't telling, no matter how many glasses of liquor he'd put away. The war wound had done two things, driven him to the bottle, and made him officially unfit for active duty. He channeled decades of repressed anger and a daily regime of pain into his faith, a burning, aggressive surety that the heretic, the mutant, and the alien must be punished as often as possible. I approached him after the Vespertine service, making sure to keep my face hidden as the faithful filed out. "Greetings in the name of the God Emperor, Pater Gethsemi," I said softly, genuflecting before the throne-topped terestine altar. The smell of incense was thick in my nostrils, resinous and somehow calming, like the smell of a favourite grandsire's pipe in front of a crackling fire. "Leanna Venderson," he said, smiling broadly.
"What a pleasure to see you."
I think I reminded him of someone he once knew. Not sure he would have been so kind to me otherwise. "And you," I replied, smiling a little with the corner of my mouth.
"Would you give me a moment?"
he said.
"I have a few of the faithful left to see on their way."
"Of course." He made his way to the other end of the temple hall and exchanged a few words with the last of the congregation to linger on the threshold. Once they were all gone, he closed the doors behind them and made his way back up towards me.
"You must be in some hot water to come down here and pay respect to the altar of the Emperor Almighty. I thought you two didn't get on."
"We have had our differences in the past, it's true."
"Well, you're here now. How's the transit been?"
I shook my head and shivered despite myself. "Ugly."
"That bad?"
he said, frowning in genuine concern.
"That isn't your blood on your jacket, is it?"
"This?" I said. "No, that's a stain from back on Ung Tem. Not had a chance to get it cleaned yet."
"I heard you excelled yourself there. Am I to call you field commander now?"
I laughed without humour. "Certainly for a day or two. If I last that long."
"What do you mean?"
Well...
"You can tell me, war child."
His face was set in a gentle and understanding smile as he reached out a fat hand. It shook perceptibly. The liver spots on his thick veined skin a nasty reddish brown. "I think I'm being haunted, Pater Gethsemane." His expression was suddenly sombre and grave.
"Haunted?" he said. "By what?"
"I don't know. But it doesn't feel like the work of the warp." He relaxed just a little.
"How do you mean?"
"It's more personal than that. I think it might be someone I killed in the line of duty, back on Ung Tem. Is that plausible?"
"It's certainly possible,"
he said.
"Especially if that person was a psyker. Their soul may have feelings that have lingered after death."
"That, Beta, is not particularly reassuring." He made an apologetic face.
"You want honest answers, I assume. Don't worry overly, Venderson. Whatever this phenomenon is might cost you a few nights' sleep, especially during warp transit, but I doubt it can do you any lasting harm."
I had memories of bones breaking through skin, invisible fingernail slashes opening throats in four places at once, and Crodden's thick neck snapping as his head was rammed into the underside of the galley ceiling. "Right," I managed. "But what if it could? Would a rite of the faith work against it? Or aqua sanctus, even?"
"It may," said Gethsemane.
He appraised me with a long glance, looking more unsettled by the moment. I had a reputation for being unshakable, even for a Noctai. To see me so visibly rattled was a sign I was telling the truth, and that something very bad was going on.
"What do you think is haunting you, Lyanna?"
"I can't say," I said, my voice quavering oddly. "I just can't say." Gethsemane pursed his lips. If there was something unnatural loose on the ship, it had implications for us all. Even if we could deal with it through faith and fire, should an official inquiry be launched, the authorities might quarantine us for years. They may even have us mind-scrubbed en masse and return us to duty as basic conscripts. I had a sudden vision of Bolvat, myself, Grotha, Pater Gethsemane, and Threnard, all standing shoulder to shoulder in some emperor-forsaken corpse furrow, reduced to simpletons, with barely enough knowledge to hold our lasguns the right way round as the artillery shells fell around us and the enemy charged howling to kill us where we stood. And that was one of the better outcomes. "Look, Pater, I need something. I am in real danger here. Whatever's after me, and it is after me in particular, I need something I can use against it."
"Does it look inhuman?"
he ventured. Everything about his body language screamed, "Please say no." "It's human, just about. Long nails, really long. I think it sort of hovers I reached into my tunic's inner lining and pulled out Doyler's sketch, smoothing it out on the altar. I could hardly bear to look at it.
Right, he said, nodding. Right. Well, that is nothing I have ever seen or heard of before.
You sound relieved, I said.
There are worse things in the Empyrean than warp geists, he said.
I could tell by the tone of his voice that he really truly meant it. Not sure I follow you.
The warp, he said.
He looked around, making sure there was no one here but us, despite the fact he had closed the doors himself only a few minutes ago.
It's not like real space. Some of my order think of its tides and currents, its very substance, as a reflection of our emotions. It is a metaphor, they say, but I am not so sure. Where strong enough emotions gather, they can, well, they can coalesce.
You think this thing, this warp geist, is a coalescence of emotions?
I very much hope not, he said. It might be the residue of a troubled soul, especially if that soul was touched by the warp. But I think it is likely human in origin. There are other entities, but they have stranger forms than this, forms that hurt the mind.
His hand strayed sideways, as if to grab something that wasn't there, before he caught himself and folded it in his sleeves once more.
Trust me, it could be so much worse.
Great, I said. That's really great.
I can give you a blessing, my dear, if that would help.
Fine, why not? But what are the chances of me leaving with something I can actually use?
Slim, he said, I absolutely cannot give you any aqua sanctus. Ecclesiarchal writ makes it very clear it is not for dispersion amongst the flock, even to the officer corps.
He reached under the altar once more, palmed something, and held both his hands out in a gesture of benediction.
Now, about that blessing.
Raising an eyebrow, I held my own hands out, as if to receive a boon. And what do you know? I did. As Gethsemane put his shaky, loose-skinned paws over mine, he slipped into my grip a glass container no bigger than a perfume bottle, along with a golden device shaped like a tiny mace. A Sanctus vial and an Aspergillum. If I remembered my High Gothic terms correctly. I took my hands to my chest, tucked the items into my inner breast pocket and bowed my head. I do indeed feel blessed, Pater, I said. Blessed to have such a kind soul looking out for me.
You needed but to ask, he said. He stood up and rearranged the altar cloth. We will make translation back into real space in 2 or 3 days, by the latest estimates. I sincerely hope that you can bear your burden until then. And once we retranslate, I feel sure this will all fade away.
Let's hope you are right. I linked my thumbs across my chest and fanned my fingers in the Noctai version of the Imperial Aquila, the palm of my right hand brushing against the vial of Aqua Sanctus next to my heart. For the first time in weeks, I felt something akin to hope. Oh, and Pater Gethsemane, I said as I was turning to leave. Can I please borrow a couple of blankets from the vestry? He looked at me, frowning. It's cold at night in my quarters, I said lamely. Cold as the damn void. That night, I made my bunk in the brig. I reasoned that I would be thrown in one of them as soon as Threnard caught up with me anyway, so I might as well cut right to it. Sleeping in my own quarters was out of the question. They were no doubt watched by a servo skull or some skulking informant with orders to report to Threnard. So were those of my known associates. Yuki, for example, would be under strict instructions to tell Bulvat if I stopped by. And she was a sucker for a direct order. Vic Stenstadt would do right by me for a while, but under enough pressure even she would fold. My jewelled Aquila got me access to the inner corridors. Fancying a bit of room to think, I took one of the cells built to contain an Ogryn. The abhuman dimwits always proved frequent visitors to the brig, and the guidance's shipwrights had made provisions for an entire squad of the meatheads being locked up at once. It seemed like a good place to use my little presence from Pater Gethsemane without being disturbed. Word would have got round about the massacre in the galley by now, and there would almost certainly be search parties looking for me. But the Divine Guidance was a big ship, at least 1,000 years old, and it had plenty of places to hide. No Ogryns on board either, so no real chance of my impromptu bunk being found by accident, even if some infraction saw the voidsman-at-arms come down here to fling some Savlar ape into the cells. So here I was, hiding like a stowaway rat. If I could ride this out till we made translation once more, I thought, things would likely get a lot better. Over time, though, as the chill seeped under my skin and the lights began to dim for the nocturnal cycle, I began to think maybe I should run back to the mess and face the music. I was already imagining the shadows on the walls elongating, forming that horrible broken-limbed shape, and with every sigh of air or scuttle of an insect, my ears were straining for that weird, tapping, scratching noise. I screwed my eyes shut hard, shook my head, and prepared to betray a lifelong conviction that the Imperial cult did people a lot more harm than good. Teeth gritted, I took my belt buckle, turning it edge first, and carefully unscrewed the big iron bunk from the wall. It was so beaten up by taking the weight of some long-departed Ogryn transgressor that it came away pretty easily, with a bit of leverage. I hauled the heavy iron-sprung thing into the middle of the room, right under the dim lumen ring that kept the cell in a semblance of illumination. Then I took out my phial of aquasanctus and decanted about a third of it into the little mace-like aspergillum. Here goes, I thought. I thumbed to the litany section of the dog-eared ecclesiarchal primer that Gethsemane had lent me, found the rite of warding that I remembered from when I was a child, and recanted it as best I could. As I spoke, I shook drops from the tiny mace onto the cold stone floor. The stuff was going everywhere, so instead I got down on my knees and used it to trace a circle of dribbled liquid around the bed until I had completed the circle. It took the best part of 40 minutes to get an unbroken ring around the outsized bunk, but I considered it time well spent. Once the circle was complete, I sat cross-legged on the bunk, blankets wrapped around me, and the ecclesiarchal primer held in a pool of light to pass the time. An hour went past, then another. Sometimes I read the same paragraph 3 times over. But when I got to a particularly good fire and brimstone passage, it took my mind off things for a little while. But for the occasional howl of boredom or despair coming from the regular cells far down the corridor, and the odd scratching of a rat on patrol, I was undisturbed. And with every minute that went past, I was a little closer to warp translation back into real space. After 2 more hours of trying to focus on Lord his name, blah, 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 and give unto us the strength to pay for another 1,000 years of oppression, blah, 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 I felt my eyelids begin to droop. I pulled my 2 blankets over me, still holding on to the book and trying to read even as I lay down to keep my mind from wandering. If I lay there awake, I would replay the strobing carnage of the galley in my mind, or the sight of Jakobsen's limbs breaking in front of me. After trying to read 6 more long and archaically worded paragraphs, I drifted off into sleep. At least, I hope I did. In a fog of half-consciousness, I slowly became aware of one of the shadows in the corner shivering, bulging, then unfolding to form the image of a walking corpse. It had long, thin fingernails and broken, bone-snapped limbs. Hideous white protrusions jutted at angles that made me want to scream. The thing peeled away from that wall, solidifying out of thin air as it reached for me. My panicked mind threw up regimental tales about Eldari changelings, creatures of pure shadow that would steal you away into a cold and infinite purgatory. Out that spectre came, stretched and hideous, walking impossibly forwards on long, curling toenails that should never have supported its weight. His face was hidden, covered over by lank black hair, earth-gritted and soiled as if it had just hauled itself out of the grave. The apparition smelled awful, a rank mixture of decay and thick, resinous smoke that filled the cell and made me retch. One of its legs ground and cracked as it stumbled towards me, the broken bone jutting from its thigh, pushing out in a squirt of rotten corpse blood that spattered the floor. I was shaking in fear, but other than that, my limbs felt almost physically pinned in place. Speaking fast, I made a word-mangled mess of the Aegis prayer and looked down at the circle of Aqua Sanctus on the ground. Part of me hoped it would keep the creature back. Another part just wanted it to kill me quickly, to let the sweet, black oblivion of death take me so I never had to see that horrific thing again. The apparition jerked forwards. One of its surreally long toenails touched the circle of Aqua Sanctus as it reached for me with its curving, fragile-looking talons. A halo of white fire blazed into being above its dark black head. It did not scream, did not recoil, did not discorporate in a mist of ectoplasm. Instead, it stood up to its full height, straightening and placing its hands together as if in prayer. Its flickering halo crowned its black pate, making it look like some twisted lunatic's depiction of a martyr. Then it faded away, an illusion dispelled by the light of reason. I came to full wakefulness in a hot flush, desperate to pee. I looked around the room, panting hard, but there was no sign of the visitation. The cell around me was empty, thank the throne. All the shadows were straight, predictable, and in their right place. But the memory was still strong, and in the back of my throat there was a strange aftertaste of smoke and soil, as if I'd swallowed a bunch of half-burned leaves. I think I made a weird keening noise then, a primal noise of pure fear. I bit the back of my thumb, rocking backwards and forwards with the covers pulled up around my neck. My bladder felt like it was going to burst, but there was no way I was getting off that bunk to use the basin in the corner of the cell. Not before dawn. At least the thing was gone. The ordeal was over. I had experienced a warp nightmare, I told myself, and a powerful one. But nothing more. Then I saw little splashes of black on the floor, where the rotten corpse blood had spattered from the thing's leg. I cried a little then, my shaken self-control taken by sheer terror. You would have done the same if you'd gone through the same ordeals. Throne, if only you could know half the things that were going through my mind. If that thing was real enough to leave those spots of black blood, it was real enough to hurt me, to kill me, break my limbs, snap them one by one as soon as I let my guard down, leave me to bleed out as I drowned in a sea of madness and pain. I must have stared at the dark spots of blood for a full hour, sitting in a patch of my own stress-induced sweat with my bladder screaming blue murder, sobbing and rocking myself like a lunatic. My eyes were as wide as those of old Vernid. I dared not close them for a moment. No sleep for me. Not now. Not ever again. The false dawn came, eventually, with the lumens in the corridor glowing a little brighter to show the diurnal cycle had begun. Time to get to work, they said. Time to eat, time to train. Unless you were hiding in the brig, of course. Unless you were a fugitive. I peeled myself off the bunk and used the corner basin as a latrine, my body sending a wave of blessed relief from the bladder upwards. Then I got dressed and walked unsteadily over to the door. I had a thought just as I left. I pulled out the parchment and quill nib I had boosted from Gethsemane's sanctum, and slumping down against the opposite wall, began to write. I had perhaps one chance left, and I wasn't going to let another night slip past without taking it. Mid-morning and the corridors were quiet. Those who weren't at Fizz were likely at one of the hymnal services recommended during warp transit, or maybe just lying in their bunks, sleeping off the muzziness of the transit pills they'd acquired from Enoch's black market. I had a decent chance of getting the objectives I set myself sorted and making it back to the brig before I was discovered. There was a part of me, an inner voice, that kept telling me what I was doing was mad. Maybe it was right, given the nightmares of the nocturnal cycle. Maybe I secretly wanted to be caught and to be put out of my misery. Nocti make for pretty good stealthers, especially those of us that grow up on the docks. I'd left my boots back in the brig, tucked under the bunk, to give me the best chance of moving silently as I crept around the ship. Knowing how to sneak around can be the difference between making it in gang life and of having a rival ganger's fisher spike slammed into the back of your neck when you think you're the one being quiet as a snake. You get sharp ears, too. Sharp enough to hear a set of booted footsteps thudding down the next corridor in time to get away and take a different route. I'd had to do that 3 times in the last 10 minutes, and with so many detours, I had made it only about 0.5 mile through the ship. But in my position, I had little choice. Eventually, I made it to the little vestibule that led to the officer-level corridors and the familiar territory beyond. Thank the stars its portal was open already. I darted my head around the door jamb, took a quick peek and darted back again. Just as I feared, my quarters had 2 voidsmen-at-arms stationed outside. No doubt Threnard had already gone in there and had a rummage through my stuff, probably found my Savlar uniform and all the little creature comforts I'd nabbed or had Enoch supply to me over the years. How I longed for a hot scrub now, and a change of clothes. I smelled bad, not least of all from the night before. I was pretty confident I could take the 2 sentries if it came to it, but there was no way I was getting in there without raising the alarm. The scrub could wait. Back I went towards the bowels of the ship, cursing myself for my stupidity in going back to my own quarters. I had to do better than that. I had to think, to let the old Liana come to the surface and get me out of the hellish trap that was closing around me. It didn't take me long to find a servo skull, one of the highly polished, cybernetically wired crania that were built as servitors from the remains of loyal Imperial servants. It was a weird-looking thing, buzzing its way down the corridor on some peculiar errand, as if a floating skull was the most normal thing in the world. We never had them back on Nocti, or if we did, I had been too low in status to see one of the horrible things. Held around shoulder height by primitive anti-gravitic motors, the servo skull had 1 long-jointed limb-like metal prosthesis and an underslung syringe gun with 7 interchangeable cartridges. One of its hollow sockets was fitted with a telescopic optica that whirred and clicked as it focused on me. Registering the chevrons of my rank on my filthy uniform, it dipped its head in an automated gesture of respect. That's when I punched the horrible little thing out of the air. It rebounded from the wall, and I swivel-kicked it hard, sending it smacking into the bulkhead opposite with a loud crack. The skull gave a high-pitched whine of protest as I grabbed it in both hands, the red lumen of its telescopic eye flaring bright. Its syringe jabbed in and out with frantic swiftness, reminding me of the dunny scorpions back on Noctis that we made spasmodically sting themselves to death by trapping them in rings of flame. The skull gave out a loud mechanical burr and fell silent. Weirdly, its anti-grav still worked just fine. When I released it, it just hung there, in the air, a morbid boy adrift in an invisible sea. Perfect. I took out my tiny rolled parchment, bent underneath the skull, and pushed it up through its jaw cavity into the interior part of its brain pan. I wedged the little cylinder in tight, slotted into that part of the skull that wasn't filled with circuitry and engine gravitics. I heard two sets of footsteps then, coming from the other end of the corridor. I padded barefoot down the way I had come, so quiet and smooth that even the scuttle roaches I passed did little more than twitch their antenna at my passing, and ducked around the corner.
"Hey,"
came a voice from back in the other corridor.
"Dorgan, look at this little floater. Pretty busted, it looks like. You think we should let one of the cogheads know?"
"I suppose," came the reply. "If you can distract him with it, I'll see if I can move some loot."
Hope yet, then. Hope yet. 8 hours it took before I got something back. 8 hours stuck in that bastard brig with only the ecclesiarchal primer for company and a belly rumbling in displeasure at our little food I'd eaten recently. I started reading the primer aloud just to hear a human voice. I tried it in Gethsemane's bass rumble, then Threnard's cultured tones, then Grother's sibilant, uncouth whine. I'd got pretty good at mimicry as a youth and never really lost the knack for it. It kept me amused for a while. Provided I didn't think too much about the events of the last night, I stopped myself from crawling out of my own skin with anxiety and fear. Around lunchtime, I went through the rigmarole of re-inscribing the ritual circle around my bunk, trying not to think about that hideous, haloed thing that had come for me as I did so. The Aqua Sanctus had worked, I think. I mean, it must have. I was still alive, and the nightmare thing had faded away when it came into contact with the circle. So it had been effective, on some level. And if Yuki came through for me, what I had in mind for tonight would probably work even better. After the best part of the day slid by, I heard a thin whine on the cusp of hearing, slowly getting louder. A burnished skull floated into view, the sight startling me a little at first, despite the fact I was half expecting it. It had two pincered manipulator arms that awkwardly held a package wrapped in brown paper. I got up from my bunk. The skull's lens eye whirred as it got a fix on my appearance, checked it against some programmed imperative, and came forwards proffering the package. I stood up and took it, hoping the parcel had a pistol in there at the very least. Once I had carefully disentangled the package from the servo skull's grip, the little monster didn't seem that keen to part with it at first, I opened it to find it held a spare set of Savlar fatigues, 2 quarts of clean water in sealed flasks, and a parcel of protein slab. "Thanks, Yuki," I said. I ditched my dirty, sweat-sodden uniform before donning the fresh clothes and downing the water in one go. The protein slab didn't last long either. I ate every morsel, even those bits that fell on the cold, hard floor. They tasted more of ash than they did of meat, but right then, they were delicious. I felt a bit more human after all that. The ache in my belly had subsided a little. I stretched out my limbs and did some fizz. One of the breast pockets of my uniform crinkled a little. I felt inside and found a parchment note in tiny, impossibly neat script. Message begins. Weapons specialist Egrond Grother seen in subquart Omeg 11-4, Enginatrium. Resistant to proposed rendezvous.